Welcome to episode 485 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And we have some Apple news today.
Oh, yeah. This is like my worst nightmare of an episode because
Apple, Sonos. Come on, what else can we get in here?
Well, we're leading with Apple stuff and there's no gaming news. If you hate gaming news, this is the show for you because there's nothing this week. There is no gaming segment this week. Other than a piece of feedback, there is no gaming news this week. So I think people are going to like that. Well, some people are going to like that. If everyone liked that, we would stop doing gaming news. But we obviously have some gamer fans. Okay, so we do have a piece of feedback.
So this is from Alex. And he says, hey guys, I just listened to podcast 484. That was the last one, if you're counting. And heard your discussion about the EA Access service coming finally to the PS4. Contrary, I think, to how you and Richard feel about this announcement, I'm not sure I'm excited about this. I'm both a PC and a console gamer, and I'm currently an EA Access subscriber on PC, basic version, but only because on PC you don't really have a choice. If I want to play EA games, I need their client and to pay via their store. The same is true with Ubisoft and Steam. One of the things I love about consoles is the relative simplicity and curation by Sony and Microsoft. Allowing third parties to lay their own services on top adds complexity, not to mention yet another subscription I need to pay for. That's in bold. Did we bold that or did he bold that?
I bolded that so that I would remember to come back to that.
All right. Well, that's an important point, and I get it. In a way, this is really EA asking to put their own store in your store, which feels weird. Without much imagination, I can envision a day when EA restricts the next Mass Effect game to only their subscription accounts, and everyone else on PlayStation and Xbox needs to wait some period of time before they can purchase it. This stinks, in my opinion, and the other big gaming companies will almost certainly follow suit. I suppose you could argue that, in a way, this is no different than paying separately for video services like Netflix and Hulu, although, at least in those cases, I only need to pay those providers once. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned, or maybe it's just subscription fatigue taking its toll on me, but I kind of wish Sony hadn't caved to EA and allowed this. And similarly, I wish that Microsoft hadn't allowed this 5 years ago. That said, I'll probably have to suck it up and get ready for this kind of gaming future. Thanks for the great podcast. So, yeah, Josh, you obviously are going to have the biggest response to this, so why don't you start out?
Yeah, I've got a lot to say. And first off, thank you, Alex, for the message. We've actually met Alex at the Home Server Show meetups, at least once, maybe a couple of times. So Alex is a super cool guy, and he's always been a big PlayStation gamer. He's the guy that I go to when I need PlayStation recommendations. So I take his opinion seriously, but I do actually have a lot to disagree with on what he has to say. So that first thing that you mentioned that I bolded, he says, it's yet another subscription I need to pay for. Maybe this is me getting pedantic, but the problem is that he said need. You don't need to pay for this. If you don't want it, don't get it. It's absolutely not necessary. I only play a couple of EA games. EA Access has been available on Xbox for 5 years, like he said. I've only paid for it for a couple of months because I just buy NHL when it comes out and that's it. Like, I don't need EA Access, so I don't pay for it. If I played a lot of EA games, then maybe I would go for this, but I don't. Just like I don't. So I also usually don't pay for Game Pass. So we'll move on from that one, since that's probably just me being pedantic. He also mentions later that he can envision a day when EA Access gets games first and everyone else has to wait some predetermined time to play that. That's already the case. That's actually been the case since EA Access launched on the Xbox. They don't present it that way. Instead, they bill it as you get early access to games if you're a subscriber. But that's been the case since this happened.
Doesn't that kind of reinforce his point, though?
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. And it actually introduces even more problems. In February, EA's biggest game of the year came out. It's called Anthem. EA Access members could play it a week early on PC and Xbox, and everybody else had to wait a week. It's only a week, so, I mean, it's hard to get frustrated about a week, I suppose. If it was like a six-month or a year-long exclusivity or something like that, that would be incredibly frustrating. I don't think people can argue much about a week. It's not that big of a deal. But there was another side effect to this. Even EA didn't view that first week as the first week of the game being available. And what that meant was, when it came out, it was a buggy disaster. It had all kinds of problems. And they kept saying, just wait for the day one patch. Day one patch is something we hear about tons in games. This game's going to have a 37 gig day one patch. Okay, that's fine, as long as it's released on the actual day one. And if you're an EA Access member, day one was actually day negative seven. I don't even know how you count anymore, because day one wasn't day one. You had to wait a week to get the patch that you desperately needed to make the game playable. So there are problems there. There are absolutely problems there. So is this going to happen? Yes, it's going to happen. It already is. He also kind of ended by saying that he wishes this wouldn't be allowed, that the store on the Xbox and the store on the PlayStation would just be the store, and it's the only way to get your games on the console. And I can understand what he's saying, especially from his statement about, call me old-fashioned. I'm a cranky old guy, too. I don't like it when people move my cheese, but I do actually like it when companies explore new business models. If it weren't for new business models being tried out, we wouldn't have Fortnite. You know, we wouldn't have quality free-to-play games if no one ever tried it. There were lots of examples of it being done terribly. But now we have a bunch of examples of it being done really well. And yeah, we're getting access to really good games for free if you want them to be free. So I'm okay with this. I'm absolutely okay with this. I do fully expect Ubisoft and Activision to do the same thing. And frankly, I'm a little surprised that they haven't already. But again, I'm okay with that as long as the exclusivity stuff doesn't go bonkers. If I have to subscribe to your service to get your games, then I'm going to be mad, because there's already too much exclusivity in video games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so now the guy who isn't a gamer is going to weigh in. And frankly, I think that puts me at a little bit of an advantage in this conversation, because I don't have a chit in the game, right? Like, I'm looking at this more from a consumer perspective and a business perspective. I get the yet another subscription thing. I get that completely. Subscription fatigue is real. People are sick of yet another thing they have to pay monthly for. I am, for example, refusing to pay Chamberlain $1 a month so that I can connect my new garage door opener smart thing to their service that they charge for. I won't do it.
Right.
So I get that. I totally understand. And if he thinks of this as a need, then that probably tells us that he's the kind of gamer who has to be on top of the latest releases. He wants access to the latest things that are available. And if this is the way that you do that, then he needs access to that.
Yeah. And I can see that. I think you just need to twist your mind back into not viewing it that way.
Yeah.
It's not an exclusivity window that's limiting how soon you can get it. Because if you Google like Anthem release date, it wasn't the date that it was available via EA Access. It was a week later, that day that the day one patch came out. If you think about things that way, then maybe you can talk yourself out of that need to get it right away. Maybe.
But what he talks about with not much imagination is the slippery slope, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're doing this now, which he doesn't even hint at, but you mention, if they're already doing this,
right?
Then where is this going to go? Is it going to get to the point that we have with Windows, with digital video, for example, where I can't get to play this game for 3 weeks because it's only available on the subscription service before it's available for me to purchase? I don't know.
I have to think that Sony and Microsoft wouldn't really want that, and that they wouldn't allow that in the contracts, at least extensive, you know, really long windows. A week or two, sure. But I can't imagine Microsoft saying, sure, it's fine for you to put a game on our platform that most of our people can't play for 6 months. I don't think they're going to be okay
with
that.
Well, I didn't say 6 months, but yeah.
I know.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing that I think is kind of interesting here is that he's talking about how weird it is that there's a store within a store.
Right.
It's a little bit ironic that this comes up this week, right? Because this week, the Supreme Court just ruled that consumers who are pissed at Apple because they limit their access to apps on Apple devices have the right to take their case to court and sue Apple for that exclusivity. And so what the answer to solving that problem would be other stores that can operate on the iOS platform, and obviously sideloaded or third-party purchases that could run on that platform. So I think that it's interesting timing. I'm not saying that it's wrong. And if you follow me on Twitter, you know how I feel about the whining whiners who are unhappy about, who are unhappy about the Apple App Store situation. But it is something that we as a society are actually grappling with right now. Is this okay?
Right. Yep.
So a lot of interesting stuff there. I really liked this message, and I like that he shared not only his thoughts on like just his concerns with it, but you know, he seems like he understood our perspectives on it too. And our perspectives were that you can already do this on one platform. Why doesn't the other platform also allow it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I feel like you just wrecked your own transition because you had shifted to talking about the Apple App Store, and our next story is about Apple.
It is indeed. So the feature this week is about Apple TV, and Apple TV had a major upgrade, as we knew it was going to. Oh, wait, except it's not that major. It's just an update to the Apple TV app, and it looks kind of the same, except the hero images are bigger. Unnecessarily, I might argue. And it is also available on the Samsung TV. So that's cool, right? Like you can get the Apple TV app on your Samsung TV in addition to your iOS devices and your Apple TV. We talked about that before. That's a good thing. I really feel like this is a bigger deal for people who don't already have Apple TV devices.
The Samsung part of it?
Yeah. The fact that there is an update to the Apple TV app is probably more significant for people who don't have Apple TV devices than for those who do, because the new app is designed to run not just on Apple TV, but also on Samsung devices and eventually all those other devices that we talked about, like Vizio and the other manufacturers that are going to support it, LG and others.
Right, right.
So that is a big deal, right? Like, this app allows you to get access to your library, to the content that they have available, but it's not like this revolutionary thing that Apple might want you to think it is, and some Apple pundits might suggest that it is. It's just an update, and it makes your content available on the other TVs. There are a couple things that we should talk about. Apple Channels. We talked about this before. Channels gives you access to specific streaming services. I hate that they call it channels, because with the exception of the premium channels like HBO, Stars, Showtime, stuff like that, these are really not channels. These are subscription services that you can add to your Apple service seamlessly through their app, which is nice. It's nice. There are 15 channels missing all of the networks, right? Like NBC, CBS, CBS All Access. That was on the slide that they showed when the Apple announcement was on stage.
So what you're saying is the word that you're using, channels, the thing that immediately comes to mind in my head when you say channels, none of that is available there.
Right, exactly. Oh, okay. Now, to be fair, most of those are already apps on the Apple TV platform.
Yeah.
And probably apps on other platforms that are going to get the Apple TV app. So maybe that's less important. Maybe what they're focusing on are the premium content, the exclusive content. But CBS All Access, I'm really surprised that that's not there, because CBS is the one that's trying to push against the regular network persona, right? They're trying to be different. They're trying to be exclusive. And the fact that that isn't one of the channels that you can subscribe to through the app really surprises me. And maybe I should have paid more attention, but I expected it to be there. Now, the good news is that you can taste any of these channels at your leisure for 7 days for free. Every single one of them offers a 7-day free trial period.
That's nice.
So that is nice. I wish it were 15 days. 7 seems really short. I don't know what your weeks are like, Josh, but I don't know how many weeks I sit down on Friday night and I'm like, what the hell happened to this week?
Yes, that's every week for me.
Right. So I feel like it should be a little bit longer than that, but it's
well,
nice
don't
that
do
they
them
have it.
All at once, Richard.
Well, right. So exactly. So that is our advice to you, that if you want to try these, don't get lured into the, oh, I'll get this for free and this for free and this for free. No, be strategic about it. Figure out which of these channels has the content you're interested in. By the way, HBO is there. Season finale of Game of Thrones. Hopefully it won't suck as bad as the last episode. That is something you could watch for free with this service if you wanted to do that.
Nice. Could you binge all 47 seasons of it this like in 7 days?
Well, I don't know that you have much of a life if you end up doing that, but yes, you could potentially do that. So anyway, the new app is out. It's not significantly different. I would argue that it is not optimized for people with large libraries with hundreds of movies and TV shows that they've purchased. You will still, if you are an Apple ecosystem person, probably still want to use the native movies and TV apps on your Apple TV for that, because oddly enough, this doesn't let you sort your content.
What?
You go to movies, they're alphabetical.
Is there genre searching or anything?
Oh, yeah. There is genre browsing, but there isn't any way of just resorting your movies. And I have hundreds of movies. So that's frustrating. I I hope they fix that at some point. All right. The other news, and frankly, I think this is more important. AirPlay 2 is now available on Samsung smart TVs as of today. The update came out today. So if you have a 2019 Samsung smart TV and certain 2018 smart TVs, then you're going to have AirPlay 2 compatibility. And that is awesome.
Yeah, I do think that is a really big deal. I mean, being able to, and not, usually not actually for yourself. Like where I find this more useful is when someone else is at my house and they want to display something on my TV. And yep. Lots of people have iPhones, and I don't have any way for people with iPhones to display stuff on my TV.
Yeah, no, that is a really good point. And I don't know about you. Oftentimes you worry about, okay, well, how are you going to get them on the network? I have a guest network so that pretty much anyone who comes to visit can access the guest network. You would still need to do that. But this is, I think, a great feature. I'm really happy to see this. And this kind of integration, I think, is really important as streaming and casting content from devices becomes more and more prevalent.
All right. Well, I guess that does it for all of our Apple and gaming news for the week. And we can move on to some other stories. Right? So another company that we talk a lot about here on Entertainment 2.0 and at the DMZ in general is Silicon Dust and their HD Home Run line of products. And that, of course, includes their software products, their app, their HD Home Run app that allows you to view live TV, whether it's from a cable car tuner, an over-the-air tuner, on pretty much any device imaginable. Their app is undergoing some changes, and it's probably about due. It's been 3, 4, 5 years since it's had a major overhaul. And this
Something like that. Are we still in beta, by the way?
I don't even pay attention to beta
tags
anymore.
I'm not kidding.
Like,
I am actually not kidding.
I'm not sure. I don't pay attention to beta tags. So for a few years now, we've had what they call their slice view, which is their main like grid style replacement for I'm watching live TV. I want to find something else to watch. And then they also have a discover view, which is not while you're watching TV. It's a separate standalone page that you can go to and find out other things that are on or are coming up to allow you to schedule those and things like that.
It's like recommendations.
Yeah, exactly. So the slice view isn't really changing, but they being Silicon Dust, put out a new blog post kind of giving some of their reasoning behind doing a slice view. And I think they do make a reasonable argument for it. Like, there are absolutely advantages to their slice view way of doing things. It does allow you to look through the guide without obstructing much of what you're actually watching. So if my wife was watching something and I wanted to go in and schedule a recording or see what's up next or something, I could do that in a way that isn't super obstructive to how she's, you know, what she's watching. It doesn't block the whole screen. You know, lots of big grid guides do cover the whole screen, or they make the live TV window like a tiny thumbnail down in the bottom corner to the point where you can't really see it either. So I'm with them on that approach.
Like, are you?
Is it my favorite thing in the world? No, but I do see the merit in what they're doing with it.
So here's my issue with that. That explanation sounds like mansplaining to your wife why she doesn't have a guide.
Because you think that the reason is like 100% not wanting to pay for the patent to TiVo?
So I think there are valid reasons for not wanting to obscure the content with a guide. I get that. I totally understand that. Many other DVRs have figured this out. And the explanation that they provide in the blog post about this says, oh, well, you know, a mini guide only shows like one or two upcoming shows. Well, that's not really what we're talking about. Like, you could have your grid guide on, say, I don't know, half the screen. Say the bottom half. That makes sense, right? Or maybe the side half, like my LG TV does. You can come up with a way of showing content in a way that is more useful than thumbnails. And I still believe that a grid guide is the best way to do it. Like you just suggested, there is a licensing fee associated with a grid guide. And nobody wants to pay that if you're a manufacturer, particularly if you're a small house, right?
Right.
So that, I believe, is probably the bigger reason. And it's convenient that they can lean back on the, oh, and we don't want to obscure your whole screen excuse.
I guess I'm not as cynical about it as you are. If you're just trying to channel surf, I can see five thumbnails at a time for things that are on right now and scroll vertically in a way that doesn't obscure anything. If you're trying to look for things that are coming up later and you're not sure what channel they're on, then the slice view is not good for that. And a grid view would be better for that. But then it's only good if it's really big, and then you're obscuring a bunch of the screen. So it depends on what you're going for. If you just want to see what's up right now, or you just want to see what's on in the future on this channel, it's really good. But there are other use cases where it's not good.
I would largely agree with that. I think the big problem that I have, and this is something that it appears that the HD Home Run team has kind of doubled down on, is they are big on the graphical visualization of content.
Right.
And a grid guide traditionally represents content primarily using text. And those are two very different ways of looking at content. Mm-hmm. Some people are more visual. Some people prefer the text. I'm a visual guy, but I like to have the text.
Yeah. Yep. And you do get both. Like in their screenshot, it shows you the text for the channel along with the channel logo. And then a poster view type thing, plus the name of the show underneath of it. Now, it's going to get cut off in some cases, but you can see the Andy Griffith or 2019 NFL Draft, and that's enough to figure out what it is for most things.
Correct. Correct. But it's hard to scan as much as you could. Like, one of the good things about the TiVo guide, by the way, which they got rid of, TiVo now has a traditional grid guide. And why shouldn't they? They own the patent for that.
Right.
So TiVo has a traditional guide instead of the two-column guide, where on the left you had time slots and or channels, and on the right, based on the selected channel, you had the lineup. I loved that. That was an amazing way of representing content. And the reason that I loved it is because it presented so much scannable content at once.
Mm.
And that was very useful to me. So anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on this. Now, Silicon Dust is trying to remedy some of their guide issues by improving the way that they present their Discover information in the Discover tab or section, whatever you want to call it. And so that now is going to be more time-based, and you'll have the ability to see what shows are coming up based on time slices as you go across horizontally, which is kind of how you would generally think of linear television. Again, the problem that I have is that it's all visual. And in this case, they got rid of the text, except for a, you know, what I might call kind of almost like alt text, where when you hover on something, you're going to get the name and that's it. So they're showing this information in a way that is more linear and more kind of collective across channels, but it's still thumbnails of shows. So, you know, this is in beta. They're trying this out, and they're trying to do new things and improve the guide experience for people. And I love that they're doing that. I just personally don't think they're going far enough.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to withhold judgment until I really get some hands-on time with this. I do really like the fact that they're being so humble about the Discover page. It's never been good. And I think you and I have said that from the beginning. It, especially if you were a cable subscriber, because then it was just like hundreds of pages of content of mostly junk you don't care about. Because even if you have 1,000 channels on Fios, there's still only 25 you actually care about. But with right. this Discover page, oh man, you had to scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll just to get to the next half hour.
And arguably that might still be the same across your networks, right? Like right. if I have 1,000 channels through my Fios and these are just time slices, then I'm going to be scrolling down way far to yeah. get to the thing that's interesting to me because, oh, by the way, the channels that I care about start at 500.
Right. I do think, and it's been a while since I've played with this, but I do think this Discover page takes into consideration the channels that you've favorited. So that would help a lot in that scenario, probably. If yeah, you've actually absolutely. Gone in and done that.
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear that, but yes.
Yeah. So they are doing one other thing that is, I think, really good. It's maybe not the ideal way of doing it, but it is something that I've also wanted to see on this page. You can essentially filter it down to, and we're still talking about the Discover page here. You can yep. filter it down to a channel by using the search and just searching for the channel number. So in their example, it's searching for 10.1. So this is obviously an OTA thing. And then it just shows you everything that's on that channel. And that's kind of grid guidey and might be what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a use case I've wanted at times. So is it the best implementation of it? It doesn't look like it is, but it's something. And so much of UI development and things like that is about progress. I don't expect them to get it right the first time. Let's move in the right direction and add features that are smart and then figure out how to make them better. And that's what they're doing here.
Absolutely. I'm going to play devil's advocate because, you know, I do that so well. How many channels do you know their number?
Well,
like through right now on your service, think through how many channels you can call up by number.
This is not a problem at all for me with OTA, because with OTA, and I'm not in a big, huge market. Like, I know that some people in really big cities have a few dozen OTA channels, but for me, it's really just the major networks. So it's ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, PBS, and that's about it.
And you do know their numbers?
I know all of their numbers. Because okay. I've lived in this area my whole life. The numbers okay. haven't changed. Yeah.
All right.
But that's absolutely not the case for everybody. I get
right.
that.
And if you have cable card, which is also built into the same system.
Right.
Then, you know, I probably know three stations.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's how I was when I had cable too. I knew where NBC Sports was. I think I knew where Fox Sports was. And that's about it. Even the networks I had a hard time remembering when I had cable because their numbers were different on cable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't mean to be all negative on this. This is a good thing that they are revisiting this. I'm really happy to see this. I hope they take it to what I hope will be its ultimate conclusion, even if they can't license the guide and just get to something that is far more usable and exposes information in multiple ways for people that think and consume information differently.
Yeah. So the other thing that they did briefly talk about in some of their newsletters and stuff that have gone out in the last week is that the hardware devices that they announced at CES, that we announced at the DMZ, the HD Home Run Scribe and Servio.
Yep, working on those.
They're still coming. The wording here is weird. And just so that people don't think that I'm an absolute Silicon Dust shill, because I don't think I've really said anything bad yet. As a reminder, they said that pre-orders for these two devices would be available in March and that they would ship in April. And we're not even to pre-orders yet. So that's not cool. And their wording for what's going on here is weird.
It's obscure. It's intentionally obscure, and I'll give that to them. I'm not going to slam on them for this because we know historically, time and time again, this company is bad at estimating hardware delivery timeframes. They're just bad at doing it. They deliver great hardware when they deliver, but they're not good at estimating timelines.
Right. So, but what they said, and this is the weird thing, is as the summer progresses, we will begin offering pre-orders and launching the new HD Home Run Scribe and Servio.
Like, okay, so June, like last week of June,
right?
Starts summer.
But that sentence makes it sound like summer is progressing now, and it's not. Technically speaking, it's not.
You're thinking, I mean, it's warm. It's warm, right? So you're thinking, oh, it's summer. Okay, well, any day now.
It's not warm here, Richard. I wore a sweater today.
I wore a coat today. I was so happy. It was wonderful. I was really, really excited about it, actually.
I'm waiting for the warmth. Let me know when it's warm so that I can come outside.
Yeah, I think that is clever, clever wording to disguise the fact that it is at least a quarter late.
Right, right. Okay, we've been talking about this forever. Let's move on. We've got a couple more video stories to talk about. This first one is a little bit interesting. It's a little weird. Disney is now taking full control, full ownership, sort of Hulu. Fox sold off their portion of it to Disney a couple months ago. That left just Disney and Comcast, which again owns NBC Universal, as the only two people that are companies that own Hulu. And Comcast has basically said, meh, you run with this, Disney. It's fine. We don't really want to deal with this right now. We'll keep our content on there until at least late 2024 while we figure this out. And let's both agree that by 2024, we can require us to, like, Hulu can require Comcast to sell it to them, or Comcast can require Disney to buy it from them. Okay, it's a little weird, but whatever. That makes sense, I guess. It's good to see that NBC Universal is not just bailing on putting their content on there, because The Good Place. But
well, right, and that I think is the big important takeaway from this is that this change is happening, but the NBC Universal content is going to stay there. It is not going away, at least until they figure out what to do past 2024.
Mm-hmm. Right, and there's a couple of things to keep in mind with all of that. Later this year, in the fall, we get Disney Plus. So Disney's going to have their own Hulu competitor, their own competitor to their service that they run. Sort of. You don't think it's a competitor at all?
Nope.
Why not?
I do not. Because what Disney Plus is going to offer is content that you're not going to get on network television. What Hulu offers is delayed or on-demand access to television content that you couldn't watch live. They serve two completely different purposes.
I agree. I completely agree with you on that point, that from that standpoint, they aren't competitive services. They are competitive services from the standpoint of, I have to choose how many services I'm willing to pay for in a month.
Right.
And I might only be willing to give money to one of these.
$7, Josh. $7.
I know, but subscription fatigue, like Alex mentioned earlier, is a real thing. I don't know anybody who hates paying for subscriptions more than you.
I hate it. I will have Hulu and Disney.
$7 for Hulu and $7 for Disney and $16 for Netflix and $25 for Sling and $15 for, like, you want me to keep going? All of that adds up to a crap ton of money every month.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
So they
are competitors
from that standpoint.
Okay. They're competitors for your dollars.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Not necessarily in content. I would say that if this is surprising anyone, this acquisition or whatever you want to call it, you haven't been paying attention. The writing was on the wall. Disney was going to take over Hulu.
Well, is that even the right language, though? Are they taking it over, or are they just the last ones standing to kind of care about Hulu? Is this a Disney hostile takeover, or is everyone just sick of playing this game?
Well, there's no way that it's hostile.
But those are the extremes.
Everybody has been fairly amicable as far as we know.
Yeah.
And I know that to some extent, Hulu has been a hot potato. Right? They've been trying to figure out, okay, well, who's going to take this? Well, I don't want it. Well, I don't. But this makes sense for Disney because Disney owns roughly 2/3 of the content that's on it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not surprising.
Yeah. And remember also that Comcast's relationship with Hulu was, shall we say, regulated.
Right.
Somewhat as a result of their acquisition of NBC.
In a very legal sense, yes.
Yes. Yes. So this kind of gets them out of that headache.
Right.
So, yeah, this is good for everybody. I think this is good for consumers. By the way, for what it's worth, 2024 isn't that far away from, roughly the time that we know that some things are going to be renegotiated for Disney Plus. So maybe at that point, they might consolidate it all. Who knows?
Right. So we still get NBC Universal content on Hulu through 2024, which is nice because that's longer than we would expect given the next news story, which is that NBC is planning to launch their own streaming service in the middle of 2020. Now,
oh joy, another streaming service.
It's not exactly the same thing because while it will have probably most of the stuff that's on Hulu now, it's going to be more like CBS All Access, where it's specifically focused on that type of stuff and has exclusive originals.
Except that you don't have to pay for it if you don't want to.
Yeah, that's the nice part about it. I hope that that part stays because they could change. And I'm shocked that they're starting with an ad-supported service because no one is doing that anymore.
Well, yes and no, right? So let's break this down a little bit, right? NBC already has an ad-supported streaming service. It already exists. It's the NBC app that you can download on pick your streaming device of choice.
But that only works if you authenticate through a paid TV provider.
Right.
I can't get that.
Right. So what they're doing, and this is why I think NBC is doing this right. What they're doing, and I can't believe that I'm complimenting any company that belongs to Comcast. What they are doing right is they are expanding the user base to support anybody, recognizing that, well, hell, our content's already available, ad-supported over the air for free, so let's also make it available to consumers in general for free, ad-supported.
Right.
They're just really expanding their customer base by eliminating a restriction that they have on their current service. Then they will also have the ability for you to buy out of those ads if you want to.
Yeah, that's how I would expect this to work too. And that you would probably have to buy in to get any exclusives too. You think that's how that's going to work?
Yeah, I would assume that you would have to be paid for the exclusives.
Okay. So it's a free tier that gets you what's on TV right now with ads. You pay them a few bucks a month to remove ads and watch the exclusive shows. I think that works. And
I think it does too.
And once they start rolling that direction, then there's no reason for their content to be in Hulu after a few years.
Right. And the beauty of this arrangement is that this gives them a good window, a 4-year window to figure out if this can work for them or not.
Right.
And if it doesn't, all right, we'll renegotiate with Disney so that our content is on the major networks on-demand streaming service that everybody goes to.
Or somebody else.
Or maybe somebody else.
Maybe it goes back to Netflix.
Right. Or if it doesn't, or if it does work, then they can say, all right, we'll put it on our own. Now, I don't really want that, right? Like, I don't want more places to go. I like Hulu because it's a consolidation of content from multiple sources. That right. is why I like the Apple TV store where I can go and buy shows because it's from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go to individual places. So I would love it, frankly, if they didn't take their content away from Hulu, but I get what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, Richard, our only audio news story of the week, and this is actually our last news story of the week, is maybe most interesting to you as not a normal person, as I described on Twitter a couple of hours ago when we were talking about this story. Google Assistant finally coming to Sonos speakers. They've had Amazon's Assistant for a few months. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's probably underestimating. It's probably been almost a year now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine that. So the Google Assistant support for Sonos has been much delayed. They've talked about this for a long time. They talked about it really since the Sonos One came out. We're releasing this product that you can put multiple assistants on. So we all thought at the time, this will give you a glimpse of when they announced this. Awesome. I can run Google. I could run Amazon. I could run Microsoft. Probably not going to see that Microsoft thing.
No, probably not.
But yeah, you can essentially choose which assistant you want to use on your device. Yes, you have to choose. I'm already seeing complaints on Twitter that you can't have both. Come on.
Yeah,
really?
That's ridiculous. No one needs that. that's what I was talking about with me alluding to a previous Twitter conversation. I don't know any normal people who have both assistants in their house. Everybody either has Amazon stuff or Google Assistant stuff. I don't know anyone who has a mix of both.
Or if you did, then you need them on the same device. I mean, I just think I never for a moment thought that that's what they would do. But
right.
People are disappointed.
Right.
Whatever. Nonetheless, we now have Google Assistant available on Sonos speakers and the ability to control Sonos speakers from Google Assistant devices. This is awesome.
This is really great.
Good stuff. So think of all the stuff that you can do with your Amazon Assistant and ask your Echo to play content on a Sonos device, or ask your Amazon Assistant on your Sonos speaker any question that you want to ask it. The same is all true now with Google Assistant. This is fantastic. I'm glad it's out there. I have not had a chance to test this yet. I expect to, but I have not had a chance because literally this happened the day that we are recording, just like the Apple news. It's been a surprisingly big news day.
Right. Yeah. Not enough hours in a day to test all this stuff. The day that we're also planning to record a show and have to get notes together and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Now, obviously, they are going to be favoring stuff like YouTube Music and Google Play and Spotify and all the usuals. There are certain services that you'll be able to kind of use natively on it. And then there are other services that you'll be able to access, like Tidal and so forth, where you'll have to request what service you want the music to be played from, and you'll have to do it on the device. You can't do it from like your Google Assistant app or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. This is great news. Very, very good news.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Cool. Well, that's it for our news. Let's get into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
I am happy to report that I finally gave in and called Verizon to roll a truck to come fix my TV service. I have been dreading this. I did not want to deal with this at all because I know what it's like to deal with a cable company. I couldn't have had a better customer service experience if I had like paid them 10 times what I paid, which by the way was nothing. So maybe I should make it a higher offer.
Yeah. Math checks out.
Seriously, Verizon delivered. I had onshore, intelligent, non-script reading technical support on the phone. They understood what I was telling them when I described the troubleshooting that I had done and put the appropriate notes for the tech who visited within a 2-hour window today.
Only
to come and
hours?
Fix the problem. 2 hours. 2 hours. Well, we can be there between 11 and 1, between 12 and 2, between 1 and 3. I'm like, are you serious? Like, I can, they're really going to be, yes, they were. They were there like in the early half of that window that I had. The guy had the notes. He knew the problem. He went down to my junction box, saw the problem that I was having on the TV. He's like, all right, well, let's start by replacing your box. That's on us. No cost to you. We'll replace your network box and see if that fixes the problem. An hour later, everything's working fine.
Nice.
No cost. Amazing customer service. Like, what happened? I don't understand. This was supposed to be a terrible experience based on all of my life experience in the past.
Well, maybe they're learning.
Maybe they are. I was very impressed. So thank you, Verizon, because seriously, they delivered. Amazing. So there's that. Now, let's talk about all the TV that I have been watching, which isn't really all that much. Game of Thrones. I kind of hinted. Not a fan of the penultimate episode. You can find out more about what I thought on the latest episode of Let's Talk About Thrones. Modern Family, This Is Us, The Amazing Race. I'm really enjoying The Amazing Race. Superstore, we had a double header this week. We got two episodes for some reason. Sabrina, enjoying that. The Office UK, I can't wait for this to be over. This is one of those things that I feel like I really need to watch, and I'm glad I'm watching it with the folks on Cord Killers. I feel like I should have this in my archives. I'm so unimpressed with it. I am just so unimpressed. One episode to go. I'll be done soon. And then finally, The Cool Kids. And that is it. And in the last couple of weeks, I think I mentioned this on the show before. We've had a friend of the family staying with us for an extended period of time. A friend was kind of living in our guest room, getting a kickstart on his life. And he has since moved out. And so, you know, I have my Xbox One in there, my original one. I have a TiVo Mini in there. I have my big old plasma in there. I mean, we set them up kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to make sure that the TV is working in there after the Verizon service was completed. And I pick up the TiVo remote and the back is gone. The back of my TiVo remote is missing. I'm sorry. How do you lose the back of a remote control? I don't understand. I don't understand how you lose. I don't get it. And Frank, this is a TiVo remote. If you've had a TiVo remote, these are not even fun to get off.
No.
They are difficult to get off of the back of the remote.
And they're not small either.
No. It's gone. If you'd like to see what that looks like, check out my Twitter feed. So I have to hold in the batteries when I'm using the remote because, yeah, it's going to get duct tape. How sad is that? My remote's going to have duct tape on it.
Maybe you can get a replacement cover?
I don't know.
Maybe?
Living like a friggin' bachelor. Anyway, that is what's been going on in my entertainment center. Josh, how about you?
So, of course, more of the Division II and NHL. So I'm just going to move on past that. That's nothing out of the ordinary there. But I I did try a new thing. Actually, two new things and one old thing. So a new thing is a new game on Xbox called Descenders. It's probably on other platforms, but it just came out to Xbox like last week, I think, and it's on Game Pass, and my Game Pass subscription is valid through the end of the month. And it was described as a like mountain biking game that's pretty chill and has awesome electronic music. And I thought, sounds cool. I should check this out. This sounds like a game that I can play when my kids are around and I don't have to worry about them seeing me shoot people in the face. And it's good. It's not great. It's a $30 game. It's not a $60 game. You can tell that it's absolutely an indie title. It's missing some of the polish and features that you might expect from like a AAA game. But it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty chill. It's a nice way to wind down at the end of the night or something.
$30 seems like a lot of money for something that you described as not polished and fine.
It is. So get it on Game Pass because then it's just part of your $10 a month for Game Pass.
There you go.
Yes. It is I hate describing things as it's a great Game Pass game, but this is a great Game Pass game. Sorry. Yeah. So the old game that I'm back to playing, it's not on Xbox. It's not on PlayStation. It's not on PC. It's on my phone. It's a mobile game. I don't know if you remember this. It came out a few years ago. They made a new Snake game. Like everyone knows Snake from the old Nokia phones and stuff. Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
But they had made a game called Snake Rewind. And I this morning saw some article about some new Snake-inspired game that's like driving buses through towns or something. And it was like on PC or something and cost $10 or whatever. And I'm like, you know, Snake was fun. I miss Snake on my phone. And I remember really liking Snake Rewind. I'm going to get that again. So, you know, I played that for like 15 minutes on my lunch break today. It's a fun game and it's free. So go and get Snake Rewind. It's fun. The other thing is a podcast. This is a brand new podcast that came out today from NPR, and it's called White Lies. If you listen to any NPR podcast, I'm betting that you've heard a promo for this by now. But in case you haven't, maybe you just can't stand the news and don't listen to NPR podcast. You might want to check this out if you were a fan of things like Serial. It's I don't know how long it's going to be, but they're doing sort of investigative storytelling about a murder that happened in Selma shortly after the Selma Bridge disaster. I don't know how to better describe what happened down there during the civil rights movement. There were three guys who were in town to help out after they saw what was going on in Selma. And they were all having dinner, took the wrong turn out of a restaurant, and they got attacked. And one of them, who was a white Unitarian minister from Boston, I think, got beat terribly and died. A few days later, he died. And it was a really big deal in part of the, you know, that era of the civil rights movement. And that murder is still unsolved. They put some people on trial, and in like an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury said, nope, not guilty. So here's the thing. I liked Serial while it was going on in the first season. If you remember me talking about it in the past, you've heard me say, I like how Serial was done and the way that they told the story, but what I hated was you didn't get an ending. Here's what I like about White Lies. They know the answer. We're going to get an ending. So I'm not Googling it. Like, maybe it's out there. I don't know. I don't want to know. I listened to the first episode of White Lies today. It's really well done. It's NPR. Of course it's well done. So if that sort of podcast sounds interesting to you, go and check that out. Again, it's called White Lies, and it won't be hard to find. It's White Lies from NPR.
That sounds really cool, and I'm kind of a sucker for these unsolved crime things.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
All right. I might have to look into that. I also wonder if, since that's NPR, if they screwed up their feed again since they had a new show out. Because today, for some reason, I got a random new episode of a show I never subscribed to, but once listened to an episode 5 years ago.
That's super weird.
Yep. But kind of like 2 weeks ago, they completely screwed up their wait feed and ended up subscribing everybody to some, like, How It Works or something that they, I don't think that's theirs, but something along those lines.
They screwed up all their feeds a couple weeks ago.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it was all of them.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah.
It was a mess. And they're like, oh, it'll all fix itself. Yeah, it'll all fix itself, except on the mobile devices that actually you have to manually delete those entries from.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So is that it?
That's it.
Nothing else?
That's it for me.
All right. Then I think we are done.
Indeed. So if you want to get a hold of us, well, all of our information is in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. But if you want to find all of Richard's ranting and raving about TiVo remotes and me calling him not a normal person, he's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We also have some other podcasts. Richard, you've got an episode of Home On that is out now. That's your show about smart home and home automation stuff. What's going on with Home On?
Yep, on Home On, this is the second week with the episode with Jennifer Patsentui. Getting a lot of good feedback on that. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, please do. I really enjoyed recording that, and I think it is a lot of good information. Even though some of it was older news, she certainly had a really good perspective on things. And then coming up this week, I am recording with Colin Billings, the CEO and founder of Oro Lighting, yet another company that is trying to reinvent the light switch. So we'll talk about why they're different from everyone else who's trying to do the same thing.
Nice. And the other podcast here at the DMZ is Story Players, where we break down story-driven video games. We are still trying to find time to wrap up that episode of The Walking Dead. So it should be soon, but I don't know for sure when. Life has just been nuts. Blame me for all of this. It's all my fault. One thing that you can get pretty much every week is this show, and we normally do it live Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, available via Mixer. Just head on over to the website, follow us on Twitter to know for sure when it's going to happen, because that's going to do it for episode 485. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.